Investigative journalist Sarah Posner is expert at identifying religious influences on our politics and culture. In a recent piece for Religion Dispatches magazine, headlined "Trump Smashing Religious Right Formula to Bits," Sarah writes, "It's possible to see Donald Trump as, quote, the perhaps unintended consequence of religious conservatives' quest for a politician savior." I'm very happy to have Sarah back with us today on State of Belief Radio. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you, Welton.
You are among the journalists who have written about Ben Carson's appeal to conservative Christians. So let's add Donald Trump to the list today. Where does he come into all of this?
Well, Trump has consistently, throughout the primary campaign, maintained strong support among white evangelicals. Now, not all the polls break down likely Republican voters into religious categories, but among the polls that do, Trump has, for months, received somewhere between 20 and 30% of the white evangelical support. Mm-hmm. So you look at the field and you say, okay, so there are a number of candidates who seem like they would be the perfect fit for the religious right. Mike Huckabee, he's a former pastor. Ted Cruz, he's the son of a pastor. Scott Walker, who was forced to drop out, also the son of the pastor. All of those people know how to speak the language of the religious right. They know the Bible. They're conversant in the Bible. They're conversant in the rhetoric of the religious right. And Donald Trump is none of those things. Yet Donald Trump is getting more support among white evangelicals than those other candidates are, although that's changing a little bit with Cruz of late. And so you have to ask yourself the question, why? The religious right, for the last several campaign cycles, you know, since Ronald Reagan, has demanded of their candidates, we want to hear your salvation story. We want to hear that you believe America is a Christian nation. We want to hear that, you know, you read the Bible every day. We want to hear that you pray. All of those things. Donald Trump doesn't do any of those things, yet he's drawing those voters. Why? Because he's tapping into their fears that America has been taken over by outside forces, unspecified and sometimes specified. Mm-hmm. America must be great again. And so you've got to conclude that for the evangelicals who are supporting him, those things are more important than the religious factors.
You know, the religious right has rarely ever been about religion.
That's right. But Trump exposes that for about them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got a very small taste of it after the last election when so many of the people in the religious right just had fits because we might have a Mormon running for the presidency. But they got over that real quick once that was the Republicans' nominee. When you write about Trump smashing the religious right social issue litmus test, what about him would normally disqualify him from the religious right support?
Well, you know, he doesn't have a track record on either abortion or same-sex marriage. He's played lip service to that. Mm-hmm. He hasn't talked at all about religious freedom in the way that they would want to hear a candidate talk about it, that mm-hmm. the bakers and the caterers are having their religious freedom infringed upon by marriage equality, for example. He doesn't talk about the Bible. I mean, mm-hmm. I was there at the Values Voters Summit when he brought his Bible with him and waved it in the air, and the audience was not convinced. Mm-hmm. They have these expectations that they've laid out, and it's been a playbook that all the candidates have followed for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about piety, talk about the Judeo-Christian values, to talk about the Christian nation, talk about how much you believe in the Bible, talk about how much you pray, talk about how it's important to pray. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't do any of those things, yet he's risen to the top of the pack by essentially being this messianic figure to them, prophetic figure, warning about America's decline and how he'll make America great again. But mm-hmm. that has nothing to do with religion. And so that exposes that they really aren't about religion, mm-hmm. that they're really more about politics and nationalism.
So, Sarah, do Do they know what they're doing? And is there any rational explanation?
There's a rational explanation in that there are, of course, quite a number of evangelicals who are horrified by Trump,
mm-hmm.
right? Russell Moore, the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, comes to mind as one of Trump's most prominent evangelical critics.
Mm-hmm.
Moore is the go-to person for, you know, what do evangelicals think? That's when reporters pick up their phone and they call Russell Moore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's been clear throughout this campaign that he doesn't really represent what all evangelicals think, because if he did, then Donald Trump wouldn't be leading among evangelical mm-hmm. polls. So I think that they've sort of lost control of the base in
mm-hmm.
a way.
Mm-hmm.
So the voices of reason can't reason with the base anymore. The base is obviously motivated by somebody like Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the leadership does with that, because they must realize now that appealing to religious virtue or religious values hasn't really spoken mm-hmm. to a significant segment of white evangelicals.
How much of this, Sarah, is a constituency that has been primed for outrage and a sense of victimization in an age of progress on issues like LGBT rights and being drawn to the guy who screams the loudest? Isn't Trump giving those people permission to do all of the fit throwing and screaming they've been wanting to do for a long time?
Well, I think it has more to do with a fear of losing what they consider to be a way of life
mm-hmm.
that they're losing control of.
Hmm.
So they look, and they look at, say, the Supreme Court decision in Obergefell last spring,
mm-hmm.
and everything that the religious right political apparatus and legal apparatus did to try to fight that was unsuccessful. And so now we have marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the growing diversity of the population of the United States,
mm-hmm.
immigration. They look at what they perceive to be the, you know, infiltration of our country by Islamic jihadists. And all of this strikes at this fear that the way things that they have known them to be for their lives, that they consider to be American and Christian, is being taken away from them. And
mm-hmm.
I think that Trump speaks to that more than anything else. And mm-hmm. I think that he speaks to what his supporters see as the failures not only of the Republican Party, but of the constituencies that make up the Republican Party, including the religious right,
mm-hmm.
to achieve that cultural hegemony that they want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Recently, Trump offended some members of the Republican Jewish Coalition with a speech that was laden with stereotypes. I understand that he was scheduled to meet with Benjamin Netanyahu when he was going to be in Israel, and now his anti-Muslim comments, I suppose, have caused a delay in that meeting. Do you think Trump's ready to be an international statesman?
No, no. And he probably never will be. You know, all of these things disqualify him. You know, if he didn't realize some of the things that he said at the Republican Jewish Coalition were playing on long-standing anti-Semitic tropes, you know, like that, you know, mm-hmm. Jews are good negotiators and they, you know, they're good hagglers. They're good at striking a good deal. You know, if he didn't realize that that was an anti-Semitic stereotype,
mm-hmm.
then there's something wrong. If he did realize it and he didn't care, there's also something wrong. But he and his defenders said, oh, you know, he wasn't trying to be anti-Semitic. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you think about those things before you speak to an audience like that. But, you know, to be honest, I think that that audience was more upset at his refusal to state a clear position on whether Jerusalem should be the eternal capital of Israel, which mm-hmm. is a litmus test for that constituency.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we move further into this campaign, it's not just his extremist statements and his racist statements about Mexicans or about mm-hmm. Muslims or about saying that we should ban Muslims from this country or we should send immigrants back to Mexico. It's that I think it's becoming clearer to a lot of people that I think he thought would be in his orbit that he doesn't really understand how to speak to particular audiences. Mm-hmm. And maybe that will aid his rivals, mm-hmm. but I'm not convinced that it will, because I think that there's just been so much excuse-making for him and so much fear of alienating the base that's supporting him mm-hmm. that there hasn't really been sufficient speaking out against him among conservatives and Republicans.
Sarah, is there an anti-Trump effort or movement within the religious right, or do you have any idea about that?
I don't think that you could call it a movement. There are definitely people in the religious right who are concerned or upset by Trump, even outraged by Trump. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that there's any organized, as far as I know, any organized movement to stop his quest for the nomination.
What's going to happen? What's going to happen with religion, government, and Trump? What are you keeping your eye on? What are you thinking is going to come down the pike next?
Well, you know, he and the support that he gets makes me very concerned about the status of Muslims in the United States of America. And already we're seeing an outbreak of anti-Muslim hate crimes and threats mm-hmm. because, of course, we all know that words have consequences. Mm-hmm. So I think that optimistically, he will force a conversation about religious freedom that we haven't had. You know, for the past mm-hmm. several years, we've had a conversation about religious freedom that centers on whether employers should have to provide birth control mm-hmm. coverage to their employees or whether, you know, a caterer has to cater a same-sex wedding. Mm-hmm. And so optimistically, he will force a conversation about actual religious freedom mm-hmm. and the role of religion in presidential discourse. Mm-hmm. Pessimistically, it's just going to get worse because I think that Trump feeds on what his audience wants. Mm-hmm. He goes on what his audience has reacted to on the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. So if they continue to react positively to his anti-Muslim screeds, I'm afraid that he's going to engage in more of them.
Mm. Gosh. Sarah Posner is an investigative journalist of the First Order who writes widely about religion and politics for The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Atlantic, The American Prospect, The Nation, Salon, and Religion Dispatches. Sarah is the author of the book God's Prophets, Profits, Faith, Fraud, and The Republican Crusade for Values Voters. You know, Sarah, we've talked a bunch of times on this program, but I don't know whether I've ever ended a conversation with you as full of anxiety and a little bit of pessimism, though it's very disturbing. Thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me, Welton.
Before we go, I had to think long and hard before doing what I'm going to do right now, but encouragement from my producer and others persuaded me that you won't think me immodest for sharing with you a few of the words that I had the chance to say at the recent Muslim Advocates dinner that I talked about earlier in the show. When it comes to issues of the heart, and I'm speaking now to the Muslim community, when it comes to issues of the heart, you should not have to go it alone. It is far past time for all religions in this land, majority religions and minority religions, to position themselves alongside you as Muslims and to remain alongside you tirelessly advocating for eradicating hate and practicing injustice as you're having to experience. What Farhana and I had the honor of doing together, along with other colleagues, sitting at a table with the Attorney General of the United States, seeking wisdom that would move us through crises with no abdication of support for the Constitution, testifying in Congress to expose the lies being told about Muslims, and clarifying the difference between a religion of peace and a sick organization perpetrating violence, and encouraging the White House to highlight the plight as well as the benefits of all minority religions in our nation. It is work that needs to be done. No, it is work that has to be done in media, coffee houses, humanist gatherings, board tables, universities, atheist organizations, and houses of worship all across this nation. If Muslims are not free in this nation, none of us are free in this nation. And I hope that our time of celebration this evening can serve as an inspiration and a time for all of us to recommit ourselves to doing the work of freedom together for the integrity of religion and the vitality of our democracy, and please God, for the possibility of peace. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you for that gift. We rely on listener support to keep this show on the air. As the end of the year gets closer, please consider a tax-deductible contribution to State of Belief and to Interfaith Alliance. If you heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to friends or acquaintances, please share it with them. It's very easy to do on Facebook, Twitter, and at stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you'll find extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned on the show. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today of Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.